Good morning, y'all. Happy birthday, America. That's a great song. That's a great group. But I like any group with a few trumpets and horns in it. Good morning, y'all. You're tuned in to Rosie on the House, your Saturday and weekend wake-up call all across the great state of Arizona. We're here with the entire crew this morning for one purpose, to try and earn our spot in your heart as every Arizona homeowner's best friend. My wife, sweet Jennifer, here in studio, co-hosting this morning. Good morning, babe. That's a good-looking red, white, and blue shirt you got on there. You are set for the 4th of July events.
Love this country.
Amen. Romy's in the call screening station. If we hit on any topic you'd like to share your thoughts or questions or input on, give us a ring. It's a toll-free number, and we invite the interruptions to our conversation. 1-888-767-4348. And it was only appropriate on this 4th of July edition of Rosie on the House. Of course, we've got Mr. Mike Reish, our broadcast engineer, just dialing in a perfect broadcast today. And we've got a special guest here in the studio, Dr. David Dean, professor of history from Grand Canyon University. I had to get him in here today in this occasion of America's birthday to talk about when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to separation.
Good morning, Rosie. Thanks. Great introduction. The words of Thomas Jefferson.
Declaration of separation. Why don't we call it a declaration of separation?
It's kind of a divorce from the king, I guess you could say. But yes, the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson penning those famous words to basically start off the document, the legal brief that says it's time for us to be our own destiny.
Now listen, y'all. You listeners that are tuned in right now, you're about ready to get the most incredible education on this document that you have ever heard. And if you know a young person that's sleeping in a little bit right now, call them, wake them up, and tell them to tune in. This is information that everybody needs to know. I can't believe how disheartening some of these man-on-the-street comedians that go across America and try and get people walking the street to answer questions about the conditions or the circumstances that created this great country.
I do too, but I always have to remind myself this before they go to it. They're not going to show somebody that knows all the right answers. That's not going to be entertaining. How many people do they have to cancel out because they answer it?
I hope it's a lot, Romy. I hope it's a lot.
They never have any of my students.
And that's what I was just saying. You never see them at a place where you're going to find...
They should pull them as they come out of Dr. Dean's class.
Yeah, exactly, instead of standing in front of Walmart or something.
This is really an important 1 hour, and I hope y'all just let all the rest of the world just go on hold and turn your radio up loud enough for your neighbor to hear it, and any young person you know, get them in front of a radio. The Declaration of Independence. Dr. Dean, what is July 4th?
Well, July 4th is the date that the Continental Congress actually approved the final wording of the document. And interestingly enough, it's July 2nd, the anniversary today, that they actually declared independence. But the document that Jefferson and committee had prepared needed a few edits and whatnot, and so they worked that out over the next couple days, and they actually approved the document itself on July the 4th, and then they didn't actually sign the famous signature with John Hancock and all those people. They didn't actually do that signature part until August when they formally put it on a nice piece of paper and sent it off to the king.
Where were they? Was this Independence Hall?
This was an Independence Hall, the famous painting you see, which is much bigger room in the painting than is when you're actually there in Independence Hall. It's not a big room.
We were really surprised when we were in that room, how small it was.
I was surprised that the upholstery is still the exact original upholstery George Washington was actually sitting on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and George Washington is really interesting because he's not a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He presided over the Continental Congress, and knowing that, and I'll get to this a little bit later, but we were already at a conflict with the British government. There was already shots being fired and that kind of thing, and Continental Congress was going to be in need of an army, so Washington would come to the presiding meetings all the time in his uniform, passing out donuts and making sure everybody had coffee breaks and that kind of stuff, and waiting for that moment when they said, we need a general. Who should we get?
We need a general.
And he's like, well, I got my uniform here. You know, pick me. But he's trying to be humble about it, you know. So, but he showed up all the time in his uniform so that way when it came time for that, he could get that job.
Well, you hear about how frustrated the colonists were with the England,
mm-hmm.
but lead us up to the decades prior to the Declaration of Independence. What pushed these farmers and these millwrights and these just common people to think that they're going to beat the largest, most powerful nation on the globe?
Well, that's a really good question, and often we perceive the independence movement as those signers of the Declaration of Independence, those leaders, presenting an ideology onto the public, and then the public just kind of going along with it.
But, let's have a revolution!
But that's not really how it happened. You have to go back to the end of the French and Indian War in 1763, and at that time, England wins this war. They get a bunch of territory from France, which is on the other side of the Appalachian Mountains. And the war is over, and England is broke. And they need to raise money. They need to take care of their troops that have been over here and things. And the colonists had had a decade or so of kind of not being governed a whole lot. They could do things their own way. The taxes weren't being collected so tightly. The customs weren't being paid on stuff. They were buying and selling goods from French and Dutch and other people. And all these
rules, enemies.
Right. And all these rules were kind of loose during that war. But now England was broke. They needed money. And so they started to clamp down on those things. And that's where the average person started to feel this constriction, this oppression, that all of a sudden, hey, I've been doing this for 10 years. We have a habit of self-government going all the way back to the Mayflower Compact. And all of a sudden, now you're telling me we can't make our own rules. We can't kind of have our own leaders. We can't pick our customs officials and whatnot from our own communities and whatnot. We can't have trials and things by our own juries of our peers. All these things that we expected, that we were comfortable with, all of a sudden, England started to take those away because they said, it's time for us to really administer our colonies, and we need to collect our taxes and have them pay their own way and take care of this stuff. And the colonists kind of didn't like that. And so between 1763 and 1776, there's a series of events that really become the clash, the conflict that leads to our revolutionary movement and the document.
And this seed of self-government thought and habit and their whole paradigm of self-government, the Mayflower Compact, that goes back to when?
It goes back to the 1600s when the first colonists arrive. They're given a charter. Go over there, start a colony, do things, and pick your leaders, govern yourselves, make sure everything's okay. So over the course of time, all of those colonies, the 13 colonies, got their own House of Burgesses or their own assemblies. They had their own governors that they were selecting. They had that the assemblies and the governors had to work together because the governors had to get stuff done, but the assembly controlled the money, and they would collect local taxes and whatnot. So if they wanted a road built, that governor had to get the taxes from them, and the legislature didn't want the governor doing something, then they wouldn't give the governor any money. And so they had this control over their destiny, the control over what was happening. And now all of a sudden, with these laws that get passed to raise revenue, the Stamp Act, the Townsend Acts, these
now we're back into the 1760s.
They're all of a sudden, it's now revenue generating for the crown, and those decisions are being made overseas, and that whole taxation without representation kind of thing starts to kind of come up. Well, wait a minute. Why are these people over there making decisions for us instead of our local people? And there's a series of, and if you look at the 27 grievances in the Declaration of Independence, there's a series of things in there that when you look at them chronologically, you're like, ah, they're talking about that. They're talking about this event over here. They're talking about that sequence of laws. They're talking about these things that clamp down on us. And so, yeah, we need to get rid of that king and go our own way and be back in control of our own destiny.
How do you earn the title Founding Father? Who, is there a critical list that we consider Founding Fathers? Is it all the signers of the Declaration of Independence?
The signers of the Declaration of Independence, those that were also part of the creation of our and ratification of our Constitution, those that would have served in the First and Second Continental Congress, and then probably prominent others that might have helped sway the revolution, revolutionary movement, like the Adams and the Sons of Liberty and whatnot. So those founding people, those people that really stepped forward and presented the ideology, carried forward this movement and whatnot, and sacrificed or put their lives on the line or whatnot for what they believed in.
So we are finishing the final draft of the Declaration of Independence on July 2nd,
mm-hmm.
July 3rd. We get the boys together. It gets signed on July 4th.
It gets approved on July 4th.
July 4th. Gets signed
August 2nd.
Of 1776, and the Constitution is dated what?
1789.
That's a big spread.
That's a big spread. And during that time, the Continental Congress is operating under the Articles of Confederation, which was a very loose document where they had to get together to kind of run the country, conduct a war, and yet they don't have a president with any kind of powers. They don't have a lot of ability to do things, and so they needed a new document. That's how the Constitution comes back.
Here talking the Declaration of Independence with Dr. David Dean, history professor from Grand Canyon University. There's a whole lot more I need to interrogate you on. We're going to do it when we get back.
Great.